Well, the sermon from Proverbs 27 this morning is going to be a little bit different because I'm going to share the message in a little different way. I'm going to start by telling you a parable. And so the message will start as a parable, and then we'll look at the text itself. You know, when I look at passages of Scripture, sometimes I think about, well, do I need to prove this text? I mean, is this going to be hard for people to really buy? Will they really receive this? So I think, do I have to prove it? Other times I look at a text and I say, is this a really difficult text that I have to explain it? Like, do I have to go into a lot of detail and really explain it so people can understand? But other times I look at a text and I say, you know, I don't think I have to prove this to anyone. And I don't think it needs a lot of explanation. What we may need to do is just realize how to apply God's word. And so this morning is really going to be focused more on the application of God's word. The story I'm about to tell you is true, just as a parable is true. The characters in the story, Ryan, Brenda, and Travis, don't really exist. But in one sense, they do. They represent the thousands and thousands of people who are just like them. They represent people who have soul hunger. People whose soul hunger drives them from places of safety to the consumption of bitter things. Now, some of you know this and some of you don't, but I'm a little bit of a study nomad. I say study nomad because for the last 16 years in ministry, I've never really been one to sit in a church office and do my studying. Never. I always find like coffee shops or places around town, sometimes the kitchen table at home. I mean, just a variety of places where I'll study, but you'll rarely find me in the church office. Coffee shops tend to be the place of preference. And so what I'll normally do is, and this has been true in the three different churches that I've pastored, I'll normally look around and find different coffee shops. I'll sample them. I'll take a look at their coffee and the atmosphere, and I'll kind of rack and stack them for subsequent visits. So here in Salt Lake, we do have some really great coffee shops. So for instance, I tried studying at the Coffee Garden. It's got a really smooth cup of coffee, if you're looking for one. It's down on 9th and 9th. The natural light from the storefront glass is really kind of gives it an open feel. The vibe is pretty chill in there because the crowd is diverse. I mean, you look at the people that come in, there's runners, there's newspaper readers, there's dog lovers, there's styling young professionals, but all of them frequent Coffee Garden. The downside of the place is that it has small tables, because I bring a lot of books. So small tables, that's problematic. And the other downside is that there's not a whole lot of plugs to plug your computer in, because if you stay for a few hours, you need a plug. So that's Coffee Garden. Let's go to Public now. We'll switch it over. Public has a robust cup of joe. It's one of my favorites. It's got urban, modern decor, kind of rugged steel, raw wood. It gives a great feel in the place. Now, I don't presently have a beard. I'm a little light on the tattoo side of things, and my comb-over is weak. But I feel like a hipster when I go to Public, spelled with a K. It just has that kind of feel when you go in there. Now, again, the downside of Public is that the tables are small, the coffee's expensive, and refills are unheard of. Okay, last place, Beans and Brew. I don't want to offend anyone, but the coffee there is like a C+. It isn't really clean, because I saw a mouse run across the floor into the nearby closet. I told the worker, and he did nothing about it. The vibe is more like the grunge, sweaty, unkempt. I mean, I go there, so I mean, you can put me in there too, but maybe you don't shower in a few days, and that's okay for Beans and Brew. There's kind of a curl of smoke that wanders its way through the shop, but the tables are big, and they do have plugs. And so that's where I found myself. Now, you may be thinking, Lucas, if preaching doesn't work for you, you can write a column reviewing different coffees, and maybe I'll do that. But I happened to be in Beans and Brew. It was the 27th of the month, And I clearly remember the 27th of the month because I was going to read Proverbs 27. I went there to read my Bible and sip on a good cup of coffee. I wanted some quiet time to think. So I ordered my sweet nectar of life, a large, hot, black house roast, straight to the top, no room for cream. I was going back to my seat, and I ironically heard Mick Jagger's 1965, "I Can't Get No Satisfaction," playing from the speakers overhead. I sat down with my Bible, and I got as far as opening to Proverbs 27 before an unexpected guest arrived. He plopped down in the seat right next to me. The leather squeaked under his weight. He sank down lower than expected in the well-worn chair, and he let out a whoa as he almost spilled his caramel macchiato all over his lap. It was as though he could have cared less about the unwritten rule of personal space. When you see a person with a book and a cup of coffee, they deserve 5 feet of personal space. But he didn't understand how that circumscribes this person, namely me. So he sat down right next to me, paid no attention, and just said, "Hey, I'm Ryan." At that point, I was a little frustrated because, remember, I wanted some quiet time with my Bible and a cup of coffee. So I nearly responded, "Hey, I don't care." But I decided not to do that because I had my Bible. So discarding the snarky response, I simply said, "Hey," in return. And with that one word, "Hey," the floodgates of conversation opened. Have you ever had an experience like that? Don't want to talk, but they just keep talking. Ryan was in his mid-30s. His Under Armour running suit betrayed his attempt to regain his 20-something figure. From what I could tell, he had a long ways to go. Anyways, he told me his favorite coffee. He told me where he lived, his age, the superiority of Under Armour running shoes to those of Nike. He told me how he had 2 kids. He emphasized the word "had." He told me what he did for a living. He was an engineer. He told me he made good money, worked for a big company, had a branch here in town, headquarters were in L.A. He told me about how he made frequent trips to L.A. Sometimes they were training trips. Other times they were just these business-related meetings that he had to go to. But at that point, Ryan almost stopped talking. He seemed to stare off into the distance, looking across the room, as though he was longing for something that was far off. Then for some reason, he decided to continue on talking. "I started going to L.A. just for work," he said. "I had meetings at our company's headquarters. I had to do these code update meetings, project reports, every now and then week-long certification courses. These weeks away from home were tough," he explained. "Our marriage had been on the rocks for some time. My wife and I, we didn't communicate much, and we slept together even less. I'm not even sure how our second child came about. My wife promises me it's mine, but I have my doubts. We ended up naming her Hope. Of all things, Hope. I think we hoped that this new baby would pull our marriage back together somehow. We'd been living more like roommates than a married couple. You know," he said, looking at me, "it's kind of where you live under the same roof, but you do completely different things. You have completely separate lives. That's how my wife and I had lived for some time. The only time we seemed like a pair," he said, and he glanced down at my Bible, "was when we went to church. Then we pasted on a smile and looked like a happy couple. People think that because you're a Christian, you have everything together. Well, we played the part on Sundays. But in real life, it was like I worked, I slept alone, worked, and slept some more. I asked myself why I was living such an empty existence. I just wasn't satisfied." Ryan paused for a moment of contemplation, and then he started to talk about his trips to L.A. again. "I started going to L.A. just for work. But then one weekend, I included a bit of pleasure. I felt like my soul was on empty, and maybe a little bit of fun would help." Ryan continued spilling out the details of his life to me there in Beans and Brew. He told me how his fun started with adult TV in his hotel room. Then it went to magazines, internet, adult clubs, and then women. Ryan explained how he tried to fill the emptiness of his marriage with these lust-filled encounters. He told me how he started making up reasons to go to LA just for pleasure. Ryan sipped on his macchiato, and then he continued. They were never meaningful relationships. None of them would have been women to write home about. You know what I mean. Mostly they were girls I met at bars, clubs, parties. I even met one at the airport, he said. They weren't hookers. They were probably just desperate, hurting people like me. Ryan thought for a moment. Pretty classy, huh? He said with just a twinge of shame. Well, it's over now. My wife caught me. She sent one of our friends to follow me one weekend. The whole thing was stupid. Ryan seemed a bit distant as he told me about the divorce, the custody battle, child support, how he lost his home, what it's like to live in an apartment, and his battle with depression. I'll never forget what he said, however, right before he got up and left. He looked me right in the eyes and he said this: I still haven't figured out what makes a man full, but I know this. Emptiness is a dangerous thing. And with that phrase, he tossed his cup in the trash and left as quickly as he had come. I wished I could have helped him. I mean, I wanted to direct him to God, but he was gone. So I looked back at my Bible sitting on my lap, sipped some coffee, and began reading the first few verses of Proverbs 27. I only made it to verse 5 before my next guest arrived. She had an iced cappuccino, a cell phone, and a very loud conversational voice. Without hesitation, she sat down in the table adjacent to me. I wondered why people were coming and sitting next to me. The whole place was empty. But sure enough, she sits down right near me. I tried minding my own business, tried reading, but she was so loud. Listen, I don't want to talk about it, she said, almost yelling into the phone. Just stop. You're never around anyways. No, no, I'm going to Vegas. No, goodbye, she said. And with that, she clasped her phone, pushed that little red icon, and hung up. She was clearly irritated and very loud. She must have noticed that her volume could not be ignored, so she looked at me and said, "My husband's stupid." I didn't know how to respond to that. So I said, "Huh? That was a mistake." I said, "My husband's stupid," she said it louder, as though I hadn't heard her the first time. "He thinks I want a bigger house, more money, a nicer car. All those things are wonderful. But what I really want is a relationship. He's gone all the time. Do you know what his job is?" she said, and I didn't want to answer. But she was going to tell me anyways. "He hauls Amish sheds. Have you ever heard of the Amish? The beards, they don't drive cars." I knew what the Amish were. "He hauls Amish sheds. He drives back and forth to Pennsylvania and hauls truckloads all over the country. Now, don't get me wrong, we're doing pretty well. We were well into the six figures last year. But he's just never home." Brenda continued talking almost without breathing. Six digits, she said. "I bought a new Beamer. I had the surgery I always wanted. Got a new belly button ring. Want to see?" And she went to show me her belly button ring, but I said, "No, no thanks." Brenda started to tell me how she had an affair with her doctor, but her husband forgave her. She told me about how she and her husband went to counseling for a while, but it didn't seem to help. She told me how depressed she had been. "My doctor gave me some medication for my depression," she said. "I feel a little more positive now. I feel like I can cope a little bit better. I can get out of bed. But I still have this empty spot in my life," she said. She told me about her effort to fill this void in her soul. She'd gotten into these internet dating sites, met a guy. "He's so nice," she said. "He listens to me. He asks me what I think. what I like, how things are going. This guy seems to really care about me. It's more than I can get from my husband. I haven't told him I'm married yet, but I don't think it would really matter to him anyways. I feel like I can share my soul with this guy. I haven't even met him yet, but I think he loves me. Well, I'm going to find out. I'm going to Vegas this weekend, and we're going to meet up. Brenda told me her plans to go to Vegas, meet this guy she's never met, and share her heart with him. This guy's a little older than me, she said, but I don't really care. I'm miserable right now, and I don't know how my emptiness could be any worse. Brenda chattered for a few more minutes, shared with me all of her hopes bound up in this Vegas trip. Then she slurped the bottom of her iced cappuccino, got up from her table, and turned to leave. There's nothing worse than soul hunger, she said to me. Say a prayer for me that this one works out. And without a chance to respond, Brenda left. I was alone again with my Bible on my lap. I was about to start reading when I noticed my cup was empty. So I got up to get a refill. Then I would for sure get down to business. Maybe I'd even be able to read Proverbs 27. I got a piping hot cup of fresh coffee, headed back to my seat. But while I was refilling, a teenage guy, probably 18, 17, I don't know, but he set up shop with his laptop in the leather chair right next to mine. I thought, what is this? Do I have a sign that says, come sit next to me? Oh, well, he looks quiet and busy. So I sat back down in my seat. The smell of leather filled my nose. I picked up my Bible again and started reading Proverbs 27, verse 5. I made it two more verses. And then he turned to me. Hey, do you know what's wrong with the Wi-Fi in here? He asked the shaggy teenager sitting next to me. I was like, oh, man. I've got a friend. He's supposed to send me some pics of this hot girl. I can't get on, though. I was halted in my tracks. This guy felt comfortable getting online, looking at this kind of trash right here in public. And he felt free to talk to me about it. Didn't he see my Bible on my lap? I was shocked for a moment. And then my mind flashed to some of the stats I had heard on NBC Dateline earlier that week. I remembered them reporting that teens see some 14,000 sexual scenes a year on TV, that 90% of teenagers age 8 to 16 have seen porn online, most of them while doing homework. 80% of 15 to 17-year-olds have had multiple hardcore porn exposures. And globally, porn is a $97 billion industry. Those stats flashed into my mind as I thought about this guy. He must be one of those stats. It took me a second to gather my senses, and then I responded to his Wi-Fi question. No, I'm not sure how to hook up here. Mine automatically does it. I paused, however, and then had the courage to ask him a question. Why would you want to look at that stuff in here anyways? I asked him. Travis looked at me, kind of matter-of-factly, and he said, well, why not? As though, like, boy, that was a dumb question. He said, listen, girls want to be seen and guys want to see. It's been like this forever. We have this kind of built-in hunger. I think he was waiting for me to affirm that. But without any comment, he just continued on as though he had to prove his point. Come on, why else would JCPenney advertise women's underwear in the Sunday paper? Why else would Walmart and the grocery stores and the gas stations and every other place you go to have magazine racks with half-naked women pasted on the front covers whenever you go to a checkout counter? Why else would videos and movies advertise with sex symbols? Hefner, you know, the Playboy founder, he said it best, sex sells. Come on, everybody knows that, he said, looking at me. He said, I've paid my price. I've paid for high-speed internet, Dish Network, adult stations, magazines, you name it, I've paid for it. He said it almost with a hint of pride. I looked him in the eyes and asked him this. This hunger that you're talking about, with all your sexual experiences, have you ever been full and satisfied? He stopped and he thought for a minute. No, I guess not. Maybe that's why I keep trying new stuff, he said contemplatively. I wanted to talk to him about the Lord, but he closed his computer and got up. "Well, I'm off to find something sweet," he said. "I'm not sure what it feels like to be full. All I know is I'm still hungry." He had a smirk on his face, and he left the coffee shop. Finally, I was able to get back to Proverbs 27. I was at verse number 7. I read it slowly. It was almost as though these were the verses I needed to share with Ryan, Brenda, and Travis. Proverbs 27, verse 7. "One who is full loathes honey, but to one who is hungry, everything bitter is sweet. Like a bird that strays from its nest is a man who strays from his home." I read it slowly again. If only Ryan, Brenda, and Travis had known what these verses said, then maybe they wouldn't have been wasting their life pursuing empty and bitter things. Perhaps Ryan wouldn't have destroyed his marriage with his LA escapades. Maybe Brenda could have cultivated with her husband what she was seeking from a stranger. Maybe even Travis would have realized the bitter end and emptiness of his immorality. Proverbs 27, 7 and 8. These weren't my words. They were God's words. And they were profound for the day that I was having. The first thing I jotted down in my journal was this: the full soul can say no thanks. I mean, I think the first thing that stood out to me in the text was just this. The full soul can say no thanks. Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, under the inspiration of God, wrote that the soul that's satisfied, the soul that's fully satiated, can trample over what is seemingly sweet or tantalizing or delectable. The satisfied soul can actually loathe honey. Now, I looked up the Hebrew that Solomon was using in this word, honey, and he uses it over and over again to speak to the sweetness of sexual intimacy in other texts. For instance, in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 5, Solomon actually talks about an adulterous woman. And he says this in Proverbs 5:3, "The lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil." So you look at the first section in verse 7, and it says, the one who is full, the one whose heart is full, the one whose soul is satisfied, he can say no thanks to honey. He can say no thanks to the lips of a forbidden woman who drip honey. I thought about it and then jotted in my journal once more. Satisfaction always comes from God and the pursuit of his plan. Literally, there's fullness and there's satisfaction in God's plan for sexuality. The one who is satisfied in God's plan can trample underfoot and say no thanks to the sweet temptations of strange honey. In Proverbs 5, once again, Solomon wrote how the sweetness of honey's temptations can beckon a man's heart. And yet, in those same situations, he calls a man back to the fullness that God has planned in his marriage. In Proverbs 5:15, Solomon says this: "Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets?" Now, let me pause. He's not really talking about literal water. He's actually talking about sexuality. All of chapter 5, 6, 7, he's talking about moral purity in the book of Proverbs. So he's saying, drink water from your own cistern, or literally, you should be satisfied in your own marriage. You shouldn't be spreading the streams of water in the street. He goes on, he says, "Let them be for yourself alone, not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. A lovely deer, a graceful doe, let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. be intoxicated always with her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all of his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him. He's held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline. And because of his great folly, he's led astray. What is Proverbs chapter 5 telling us? What is Solomon counseling us? He's counseling us to have a soul that's full in the plan of God. Let your soul be full of God's plan for moral purity. Let the boundaries of marriage satisfy your heart. Be filled with your spouse. And if you're filled with your spouse, then you can say no thanks to the temptations that surround us every day. My friends, I want to say this. There are drips of honey that come at us every single day and say, taste this, try this, click here, change the channel to this one, watch this movie a little bit longer. Oh, it doesn't matter as that scene plays out. Drips of honey all around us. And yet in the wisdom of Proverbs, it says, listen, if your soul is satisfied, if you're filled with God's plan, then you can say no thanks. I was trying to think about, like, where's an illustration where this happens? And I'll tell you where my mind went. It went to Thanksgiving. At Thanksgiving, people always make way more food than you can actually eat. I mean, that's why you have all those Thanksgiving leftovers, right? I mean, there's a huge turkey. You can't eat the whole turkey. There's like two, three, sometimes four pies. I mean, who can eat all those pies? I mean, there's all these fixings and all this stuff, and it's spread out all over the table, so much so you barely have a place to put your own plate. And you sit at the Thanksgiving table, and you pass it around, and the stuff comes, and you fill your plate, and you stuff your belly. And finally, you're just so full. I mean, it's like grandma's apple pie comes, and grandma's pumpkin pie comes, and grandma's cherry pie comes, and you're like, holy cow. Finally, she's going to hand you another piece of pie, and you say, oh, grandma, no thanks. I'm what? Full. Do you see, when you're full, you can say no thanks, even to things that appear sweet. What he's saying in this proverb is if your soul is satisfied in God's plan, you can actually say no thanks to the drips of honey that tempt us every day. I wrote a few phrases about that in my journal and continued reading verse number 7. The one who is full loathes honey, but to one who is hungry, every bitter thing is sweet. So the first thing I saw was that the full soul can say no thanks. But the second thing I saw was the hungry soul will dumpster dive. I mean, that's what it seems to say. But the one who is hungry will eat bitter things. I mean, they'll go after things that are bitter. And they'll think of them as being sweet. The soul that's weakened by hunger, the soul that's languishing, the hunger-panged soul will be susceptible to the temptation of bitter things. I want to tell you again, this word bitterness is used by Solomon in a number of contexts with immorality. Again, in Proverbs chapter 5, for the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end, she is bitter as wormwood. I want to tell you, you start asking people and sitting with people and talking with people who have had immorality in their life. They've had these different experiences where they've stepped outside of God's bounds for sexual purity, these bounds of marriage. You start talking to them, and they will start talking to you about the bitterness at the end of those trails, the brokenness that occurs in their life. Solomon said it right here, but the end, she is bitter as wormwood. Again, Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 7:26, I find something more bitter than death. what is more bitter than death? This is what he says. The woman whose heart is snares and nets, and whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God escapes her, but the sinner is snared by her. The woman whose temptations are like drops of honey, but whose end is bitterness, she says this in Proverbs 7. I've perfumed my bed with bitter herbs, aloes, cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till the morning. Let's delight ourselves with love. Solomon says this. Many a victim she has laid low. All her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. But here we have a hungry soul. We have someone who's not satisfied in God, not satisfied in God's plan for sexual purity and marriage. And what happens to that hungry soul? Well, soul hunger is a dangerous thing. And the soul that's not filled by God and his plan is in danger of Satan's temptation to find satisfaction in bitter things. And so the hungry soul goes to dumpsters. The hungry soul will eat bitter things. The hungry soul will tend towards things like adultery, fornication, pornography, emotional affairs, and the list could go on and on. I wonder if that's why Paul tells married couples in 1 Corinthians 7, he says this, the husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Can I just be clear about this? He's talking about sex. He's saying don't deprive one another of sex, except perhaps for a limited time for prayer. So listen, if you're not having a normal, healthy marital relationship, then you better be praying a lot. I mean, that's what he says. So if you're not having sex, you should be praying. But then come together again, listen to this, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. What is he saying? I want to tell you something. A soul that's not satisfied will go looking other places, and Satan will say, come on over here. That's what Paul is saying. So find satisfaction in your marriage, he says. The satisfied soul can say no thanks, but the hungry soul will dumpster dive. I thought about verse 8 for a moment before closing my journal. Verse 8 says, like a bird that strays from his nest is a man who strays from his home. It is a dangerous thing to wander from your proper place. Like a bird that wanders from his nest, so is a man that wanders from his place. When you leave your proper place, God's intended place, the boundaries for your marriage, when you leave that, you're in a dangerous place. Solomon was admonishing us to stay close to the place where God intended us. I thought about Ryan. Do you remember? He started taking those trips to LA, and he started wandering from his proper place. Or about Brenda and her rendezvous in Vegas. She was leaving her proper place. And in doing so, she was like a bird that has left her nest. And I think there's one really simple illustration in the scriptures of this passage. The man's name is David. It was Solomon's own father. Remember? I mean, imagine Solomon thinking of his own dad when he read this. Like a bird that strays from his nest is a man who strays from his home. David, it was in the spring of the year, 2 Samuel chapter 11, the time when kings go out to battle. But David sent Joab and his servant with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem. So his proper place was out to war. I mean, I'm just telling you, where was his proper place at that time? It was to be at war with his troops. But he stayed home. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the room of the king's house, and he saw from the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. And he wandered from his proper place, didn't he? mean, all of a sudden, things that fall out. Like a bird that wanders from his nest, so is a man that wanders from his place. I began to think of all the tragic stories I've heard. Do you know how many tragic stories I've heard? And just tragedy after tragedy about people who wandered from their proper place. Oh, it was just a little drinking on the front porch with a neighbor. And where did that end up? Oh, I just started hanging out over at this friend's house, just trying to help with a few fix-it projects. And how did that end up? It was just a little bit of a lack of professional distance. And how did that end up? Well, we started having these daily gym encounters. You know, we'd always have the same treadmill right next to each other. And how did that end up? Oh, it was just a little flirting here and there between cubicles. And how did that end up? You see, when you start leaving your proper place, you put yourself in a very dangerous position. Right before I left for Guam, I was sitting studying for these 23 speaking sessions, and I was sitting outside on my picnic table, and I stood up to stretch, and I looked over my fence, and there in the grass, I saw something move, and I looked a little bit closer, and there, all by itself, next to the stop sign in the grass, was a baby duck about this big. I mean, just a little tiny baby duck, and I thought, that's a dangerous spot for that baby duck. No mother, father around, no nest to protect it, just sitting there out of its place. And I thought, you know, that's what this passage is saying. You leave God's intended place for you, and soon you will find yourself in a dangerous place. So this whole passage unfolds. And what is he saying here? He's saying, don't be like the bird that leaves the safety of the nest. Or if you fast forward to the book of James, James will say this. He said, every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lusts and enticed. It's the fishing metaphor of a fish that's drawn out of the safety from underneath the log, and soon it's going to be caught. Don't be like the baby bird outside of the nest or the fish outside of the log that once protected it. Don't be like that. Instead, stay in God's intended place for you and your sexuality. Someone who's hungry in their soul will eat bitter things. They'll be like a bird that wanders from its nest and is in a very vulnerable place. But one who's full, one who's satisfied with God's plan, can say no thanks to the temptations that are all around us. And so I want to close this morning with this. Maybe you're here this morning and your soul is pained with hunger. I wonder if there's some here even this morning who are entangled in the hooks of bitter things. What I mean by that is that you have not had a satisfied soul and you've been dumpster diving in your sexuality. You've been viewing things, you've been practicing things, you've been involved in things that are outside of God's plan. This morning, I want to direct you to the one who fills all in all. If you want true satisfaction for your soul, if you want a heart that's filled, it's only going to come from God and obedience to God's plan. Remember, he's called the one who fills all in all. Remember, he's the one who, in his presence, there's fullness of joy. At his right hand are pleasures forevermore. It's the psalmist who says this, my flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Literally, he fills my plate. He's my portion. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. I wonder what Jesus would say to someone who's been like a bird who wanders from his nest. I wonder what Jesus would say to someone who's been dumpster diving. Well, I think he'd say something like he said in John 4:14. Remember, he talks to a woman who's been involved in all kinds of immorality, the Samaritan woman. And he looks at her, someone who's been thirsty, someone who's had soul hunger, and he says this, whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never thirst again. The water that I will give him will become to him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And so this morning, if you want a satisfied soul that's able to say no thanks, if you want to get out of the dumpster and get back to God's intended place of safety, the nest that he's made, then delight yourselves in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Let's close in prayer.